Good morning. Maybe I should try that again. Good morning. Welcome back for those who are back. For those who are here the first time, welcome. Week two of Judges. This week we're actually going to get into the book and do chapters 1 and 2, which is something of a synopsis or a preview, an overview of how this whole business of the judges goes. That the problems, the punishment, and the deliverance over and over again. But let's begin with prayer. Our Father in heaven, we thank you for the opportunity that you provide us to come together to study your word. We ask the blessing of open ears and open hearts and open minds that your word finds a home in our hearts and that it becomes part of us and that we become more and more conformed to the image of your Son. Please guide us, bless us with the wisdom and understanding that we may take these things and do them for your honor and glory. We ask this in Jesus' name. Last week, I showed you a lot of maps. This week, we're going to have some more. And one of the things that I ran into last week in trying to figure out where all these places were is which one of them is the right one. And one of the cities we talked about was Hazor. Turns out there are at least three of them that I found on the maps. So getting the city associated with getting the correct city associated with the happenings is tricky. There's one that, which is the one I pointed to, which was way up north in Naphtali, north of the Sea of Kinnereth or Sea of Galilee. There's another one down in Judah, or just a little bit north of Jerusalem. And then there's a reference to one way down in the south end at the southern fringe of Judah. Well, it turns out that the first one is probably the one that is correct. But, you know, just like we have 88 places in the U.S. that are named Washington, and there are 30 Greenvilles, you got to know which one you're talking about. So Judges 1:1. Now it came about after the death of Joshua that sons of Israel inquired of the Lord, saying, "Who shall go up first for us against the Canaanites to fight against them?" In one sense, you could say this is the high point of the whole book. Because what did they do? They inquired of the Lord. They asked for his guidance and his direction. What should we do? And there are a few more times, a few places where this is seen again. But as we get toward the end of the book, we don't find that going on. They're making decisions and going and doing things without ever asking. And then they get into this big mess, and now they got to find a way out of it. And maybe then they ask for something. But here, they inquired first. Well, who was the first one to go up? Judah. Does that have any significance? It doesn't say directly that this is significant, but what about the tribe of Judah? The Messiah came from the tribe of Judah. If you remember Moses' blessing, not Moses, Jacob's blessing, he said that the scepter shall not depart from Judah until Shiloh comes, or the word Shiloh, some think it means to whom it belongs. So the scepter shall not depart from Judah until the one to whom it belongs comes. So here we have Judah in a place of prominence. Simeon went along with him. Judah asked Simeon, "No, come with me, and we'll fight together, and when we go to take the lands allotted to you, I'll fight with you." And they did. And they had amazing success. they had inquired, they did what they were supposed to do. God was with them and granted them amazing success. They took city after city after city. There is the little thing put in there about, you know, they got the Canaanites and the Perizzites and also at Bezek. And Bezek is up in Manasseh. That's north. You know, you've got Judah and then Benjamin, and Manasseh is north of that. And Bezek is in Manasseh. So you know, you kind of wonder, what are they doing all the way up there? Well, it's not that far. You think about that country, it's not that big. You might be talking 30 miles, 30 or 40 miles from one to the other, which, you know, 1 foot, yes, it's quite a bit, but it's not that big. The Adoni Bezek, or Bezek, means Lord of Bezek. It's a title. He was the king. And we have that thing. They captured him, and what did they do to him? They cut off their thumbs and big toes. Seems kind of gruesome. Why would anybody do such a thing? I mean, they didn't kill him. They just... Yeah. How can you hold a sword, you know, take your thumb away, how do you hold a sword or other weapon? And without your big toes, it's going to be hard to run, it's going to be hard to maneuver. So it's really just crippling them. Like they would hamstring a horse so that it couldn't run. This is basically crippling. It says that they captured Jerusalem and burned it. Well, Jerusalem seemed to go in and out of the hands of various ones from time to time. They fought in the hill country. Now, Jerusalem is in the hill country. It's in sort of a mountainous region. And as you go eastward, then you come down into some foothills that are kind of like our Piedmont here in North Carolina, although much narrower. The Piedmont here stretches for 100 miles or 200 miles. There, it's, you know, maybe 8 or 10 miles wide. So there's this rolling hills between the higher parts and the coastal plain off to the east. So they were having success in the hill country. In the Negev, which is both south and desert or dry place, and in the lowland, which would be down in the coastal plains. So they were having good success everywhere. They captured, this one's fun, according to the Complete Jewish Bible, that would be pronounced Hebron rather than Hebron, with a k, like chemistry at the beginning and the emphasis on the latter part. It was Kiryat Arba. Arba was the name of a giant. There was that, you know, Goliath and all his family and sons and such were really big people. Arba was a giant there, and he had his three sons, which had been referenced earlier when Moses talked about, you've heard about the sons of Anak. Anak is the word for giant. And this was his city and where his family lived. And they captured that and drove them out. Judges, that's supposed to be an equal sign, not a Y or approximation. This passage, 1:10 through 15, is basically right out of Joshua. And this is... it's a little disconcerting because it's not a strict history going, you know, just straight ahead in time. The writer of Judges went back in places and picked parts out and recanted or restated some of these passages, such as about the death of Joshua. interesting thing here. Flashback, skip that. This introduces Othniel, and here's another one. The more I read, the more trouble I get into. Because this pronunciation that's shown is modern Israeli Hebrew. And there are two pronunciations of what we would say was a T, which is either the hard T or Th. And so the modern Hebrews, the modern Israelis, don't say the soft Th. And so even though it's spelled this way, probably historically, they would say Othniel as opposed to Oth or Oath. The more I read of it, the more trouble I get into. So maybe I should just leave that. Anyway, this introduces this person who was Caleb's nephew and also his son-in-law. And he got to be his son-in-law by capturing this city. Caleb said, whoever takes this city, I'll give him Aksa. My daughter is his wife. And he did, and that's what happened. In chapter 3, we'll see that he is the first judge listed in Judges. And what tribe is he from? Anybody know? Take a guess. Remember what we were doing earlier? Judah. Yeah. So he's of the tribe of Judah. So again, we have Judah in that front place, prominence. Judah and Simeon went and they captured Zephath. They utterly destroyed it, and the name was then called Hormah. And I looked back to where had this been mentioned before? Well, when the Israelites were supposed to go in, when they first came out of Egypt, and they were supposed to go in and take the land, they sent the spies out to check it out. So they were supposed to just go do it. And the spies came back and gave the bad report, and they were all discouraged, and they were weeping and moaning and complaining. And God said, okay, you think I brought you out to die here? You can die here in the wilderness. And then when they heard that, they all said, oh, no, we're going to go take it now. We're going to do what he told us to. Moses said, don't do it. The Lord is not with you. You're going to get whooped. But they went. And this is from Kadesh Barnea. They went up somewhere close to Jerusalem, and they were engaged by the Canaanites and the Amalekites. And they whooped them. They beat them back, and they chased them all the way to Hormah. And so I just was wondering, with this utter destruction there, was this in their minds of payback? You know, you got us once, we're going to get you now. Just speculation. No. Okay, so Judah went in, and now there's a color coding here. All of the cities that are circled in black, or whatever it looks like there, are the ones that are they said they took. So they took Jerusalem, they took Hebron, they took Debir, Arad, Hormah, and these three cities of the Philistines. The Philistines had five major cities, and Gaza, Ashkelon, and Ekron are three of those five. And they took them. Now, we know they didn't hold them because later on, you know, the Philistines rose up and they were one of the major oppressors in this period. But they had gone and done that much. They did not, however, succeed in taking some place in there which is... It's not said exactly where it is, but this big reddish thing is translated as the valley, or in some translations, the plain, or the lowland, or the vale. The word is Shephelah, which we have here in 119, now the Lord was with Judah and they took possession of the hill country, but couldn't drive out the inhabitants of the valley. This is from the New American Standard, because they had iron chariots. Now let's say valley for just a little bit here and look at could not. Really? A lot of commentaries make a fuss over this in here about what happened. They could not do this. If the Lord was with them, what was beyond them? Why didn't they go? Well, they had iron chariots. The Israelites didn't even have iron, let alone iron chariots. But it says they could not. And many of the commentaries will say, oh, well, somehow they became fearful, they lost faith, something or other. I don't know. Any ideas? Now, this is really kind of a turning point because the narrative then starts talking about all of the failures. So Judah did very well, except for this. Now, did they lose faith? Were they afraid? Had they, or were they biding their time? You recall that the Lord said he wasn't going to drive out all the peoples right away because then the land would be overrun by wild animals. They wouldn't have enough people to hold it and maintain it. You know, I don't have a definitive answer for you here. You're jumping ahead. It's never a bad thing. Yes, Ed. The people they were trying to drive out. This was in the low country, the valley. This is probably the Philistines we're talking about here. The Philistines actually controlled iron at that point. You may remember there are other places in the scripture where it says if they wanted to get a hoe sharpened, they had to go to the Philistines and pay some exorbitant fee to have any sort of iron work done. They had no iron weapons. Well, if somebody's out there in a M1 tank, and the best I've got is a mule, I might be fearful. That'd be an interesting matchup. It'd be interesting to see how he would do it. What I was saying about the valley, this area, that little thing in red there, Shephelah, the word is translated as valley, vale, plain, foothills. It's all kinds of stuff. And in reading about this, of course, the Philistines had basically the coastal plain. But those hills are not so much like our foothills going up to the Rockies or something like that. There's a sort of a disconnect between them and the higher hills. And it said that there are five major valleys that run east-west through that region. And those would be the routes of trade or commerce or, if you wanted to move a military force, you would follow those valleys. So whoever would control those valleys or a particular valley would have control of that region. You know, the text is not specific. So we're trying to, I don't want to say rationalize, but make the most sense we can out of the information that's given to us. and what we can look at in terms of what we see geographically there now. Then we turn, we have this first case of a failure, and the whole thing turns. They did not drive out the inhabitants. They intermarried with them, and they worshiped their gods. They provoked the Lord to anger. And this is largely the rest of the book of Judges. Then we go through this listing of the various tribes and what they did or didn't do. Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites that were in Jerusalem. Now, the Jebusites lived in that whole region around there. Specifically, they did not drive them out of Jerusalem. Joseph took Bethel. Who's Joseph? There's not a tribe of Joseph listed here. Yes, Manasseh and Ephraim together, they have the two half-tribes, and here it just says the house of Joseph. Manasseh left a bunch of cities, Dor, Megiddo, Tahanak, Ibleam, Bethshan. I don't know if they captured all these others and just left that northern region. The text does not tell us they did this, but they didn't do that. The emphasis is on what they didn't do. Ephraim left Gezer. Now, Gezer, in another map, you'll see it down probably 15 miles south of where it is shown there, in Dan's territory. Gezer was significant because it was on one of these roads that runs through there, and it was a heavily fortified city. It was a major city that came to prominence in about the first half of the 14th century, I think it was 14th. Right at the beginning of this period of Judges, this city became very strong and prominent, and so they left it there. Zebulun, this is interesting. It mentions Kitron and Nahalol. And I could not find a location for either one of them. I believe both of those appear one time in the Bible, and none of the maps, nobody has found anything in archaeology that says, this is this town. And one map even had Nahalol way over there on the coast, completely outside the region of Zebulun. So who knows? But they didn't accomplish this either. Asher was probably the worst performer in terms of the number of cities that they left unconquered. I mean, how many might they have gotten when they left a whole mess of them? Naphtali, these two that are mentioned, Beth Anat and Beth Shemesh, are house of or temple of Anat, who is a goddess, a very nasty war goddess. And it's pretty gruesome what they say about this one. And Beth Shemesh is the temple of the sun, or Shemesh is the sun. So maybe these were places that were heavily defended because they had their temples there. Don't know. But that's what the text gives us. Dan left these two cities, Ayalon and Sha'albim. And Dan was kind of humiliated. They couldn't even come down out of the hills because the people would drive them back. Dan eventually migrated up to the north end of the territory. So on the maps, you'll see a south Dan, which is this region, and a northern Dan, which is way, way up on the north end. What about the others? We've got all these towns that they conquered. The ones that weren't conquered, were all these others conquered? Don't really know. The text emphasizes the failures. Okay, if you were in today's teaching world and all you did was talk about the failures, boy, would you get nailed. Your course evaluations would be so bad, they'd look like mine. Why would there be such an emphasis on all these failures? Now, here again, we're speculating. The text doesn't explain. Yes. Did you all hear that? Okay. Certainly, they had an effect on, you know, the places that they did not conquer, and then they mingled with the peoples and started intermarrying with the peoples. All of this was the path to the downfall. What they did not do, they did not keep the whole commandment of God. They were told, go do this. And they didn't. They pulled up short somewhere. Oh, I like A and C and D, but B, Judas? I'm going to have to leave that one. There's no mention of those tribes that were in Transjordan. That is the part east of the Jordan. Why not? The ones that were east of the Jordan, Reuben, Gad, and part of Manasseh. That's true. They went along with the others to conquer the part west of the Jordan. But do you remember the part of the history? This was even talked about last week. When they came up, they came around the east side, around Moab and Edom, and they came up the east side, and they conquered those lands with Moses. Those lands had already been taken. So there's really nothing to say there. Were there any tribes that had, now, for lack of a better term, demerits? No demerits? Was there anybody who is not mentioned in here who was in the west side there that there's didn't say they failed somehow? Pardon? Well, the Levites didn't have any land. All they had, they were allotted certain cities within each one of the others. Was there a name that didn't come out? I'm really testing you here. Issachar was never mentioned. Nothing bad said there. Issachar appears twice in the book of Judges. In both cases, it's a very positive mention. So if you want to pick your favorite tribe to join up with, Issachar would probably be a good choice. So they didn't drive them out, but, coming back to Ken's point, Manasseh, Zebulun, and Naphtali made the inhabitants forced labor. Well, this sounds good. Now we've got servants. We've got somebody to do the work for us. Isn't that better than killing them? If you had the choice between killing your neighbor and having them work for you, Doesn't that sound like a good deal? Except that that's not what they were told to do. And as we've said before, then they started intermarrying with them, worshiping their gods, turning away from the Lord, and that's where all the trouble came from. So this brings us up to chapter 2, which is, there's not a lot that we really need to say here, but the beginning, what is this you have done? The first passage there, would somebody like to read that? Great, I didn't mark. It's 1 through 3. Somebody with a loud voice. Somebody? Yes. Judges 2, 1 through 3. God had made a covenant with the peoples, or with the people of Israel. He promised to keep his side of the bargain. But it's not a one-way deal. You don't get all the blessings without some obedience. And they went into the lands, they conquered some, they left some, they eventually did all the things that he warned them against. Do not mix with these peoples. Do not take their son, their daughters for your sons and give your daughters to them for wives. They did all the things that he said, don't do because this is what's going to happen to you. And they went right ahead and did it. What is this you have done? I will not forsake you, but what have you done? Well, the people had all been gathered there at the place called, they called it then, Bokim, which means weepers. The angel of the Lord had come up, it says, came up from Gilgal. Gilgal was the first place that they had encamped when they came in near Jericho. And the name means circle of stones. You remember when they crossed the Jordan, Joshua told him, one man from each tribe, take up a stone from the riverbed and bring it up here. And when they put them together there, it was to be a memorial so that when their sons would see this set of stones, they'd say, what's this mean? And they'd tell them about how God had brought them through the Jordan on dry land. Well, there are a couple other Gilgals also, but this one, the angel of the Lord came up to this place they then called Bokim. And after the people had heard this statement, then they, oh no, we have messed up. They wept and they offered sacrifices there. And for a little bit, things turned up, but then it went right back to the usual thing. They turned to worshiping the Baals and Ashtaroth. Now, Baal is, the word means Lord, husband, master. You, in some translations, instead of Baals, you'll see Baalim, which is the I am, the im, is the masculine plural form. And, you know, we just stick an S on everything. In Hebrew, this is the masculine plural form. Ashtoreth was a goddess of fertility and war. Ashtaroth is the plural form, the feminine plural form. Now, this is, the names look a lot the same, so you could get it confused with Asherah, but this is a different goddess. And you'll often see the Asherim, they were to tear these things down, the Asherah poles, and that kind of stuff. Sometimes the verb, or not the verb, but the noun changes gender when it goes to plural, so that's probably why it's Asherim, which would say masculine, or maybe it's just because it's a pole and it's treated as a hunk of wood instead of something male or female. Like I said, I should probably stay out of the Hebrew. Two 11 through 15, again recounting the thing of sin and consequences. The people did evil. They went and they disobeyed. They did what they weren't supposed to do. They served Baal and Ashtaroth. They forsook God. They worshiped others. And they were sold into the hands of the various oppressors. And this happens over and over again. But it's not, as we pointed out last week, it's not the whole nation every time. The judges were specific to certain areas. There may have been several tribes influenced by a particular oppressor, not necessarily the entire country. And so, you've got the same pattern going on over and over again. They were severely distressed. The first will be the Mesopotamians, and then there's a whole sequence of different ones, different oppressors, and the judges that were raised up. So 2:16 through 19, God had pity on them. They would eventually, at least some of them, would eventually say, oh, we have messed up, and we're in this trouble because we didn't obey God, and they would plead for help, and he would have pity on them and raise up a judge to deliver them. So he gave them judges, but they didn't listen. For the time that a judge was alive, the people would obey and they'd be okay, sort of. But the moment that judge died, they'd turn around and go back to where they'd been going. And even worse, they play the harlot with other gods. It says that they were even more evil than they were before, than their fathers had been. This is not a pretty picture. So finally, toward the end there, 20 through 23 is basically have it your way. They'd broken the covenant. They could not legitimately expect anything from God because they had broken their side. Yeah, probably. Thank you. I think she got the message. And I think that is the message that we all need to get from this. I mean, that is why it's there, that we can learn from it, that we can look at ourselves and say, how do I compare to this? And is this what's going on in my life now? And none of us are pure. So, exactly. They didn't drive out the peoples. It says that the Lord left these peoples to test Israel. And this is going to be stated again in the beginning of chapter 3. He left them to test Israel. Whether they would listen to him, whether they would do what he said or not. In other words, he gave them the choice. He left the choice there. He didn't make it so everything would be just all nice and sweet and no adversity. Now they're going to have adversity, and they get to make the choice. Do we obey God, or do we go along with these people around us? So the stage is now fully set for the narrative of Judges. Chapters 3 to 16 are the accounts of the various judges, starting with Othniel, ending with Samson. Some of the judges get one or two verses. Some of them get three or four chapters. But this will be the heart of it. I'm going to have next week and the week after, and then most of that section, Jason Burns is going to be doing. So we get the various judges and what they did. There are a variety of characters in there. Many will seem less than exemplary. And a lot of the commentaries jump all over that. Oh, look what he did. You know, here's Samson going off. And well, maybe they weren't exemplary in that way. But to some extent, they were obedient to God, and he used them. You know, he used Balaam's donkey. He can use anything. Chapters 17 through 21 are really the Wild West of this book. There are no active judges in those chapters, but there are some very, at least by our current thinking, some very bizarre things going on in there. Even to the point where they almost wipe out one of the tribes of Israel and then have to try to figure out how to rebuild it so that it's not lost. So, next week we'll have chapter 3, which will cover Othniel, Ehud, and Shamgar. So, read up and be ready. Any comments or anything? We have a few seconds, James. That's one of the things that many of the commentators talk about, is where the scripture says they could not take that land. They're very quick to say, it's not that God couldn't do it, it's that Judah did not do it. And try to explain it in terms of some lack of faith or something. Exactly what happened, you know, we've only got so much text to work with. Anything else? Thank you for your attention.